Thank you for that, Gavin. Well, hello, everybody. As he says, I'm Stuart. I came up Friday, and I've not stopped eating since. It's been fantastic, well looked after. Kate and Johnny have hosted us and, yeah, allowed us to use their place as a base, so thank you very much for that. But, yeah, it's been great. I've loved it. I've spent a long time with Gavin yesterday, went for a long walk, just hearing some of the stuff that's gone on and hearing some of your story has been inspiring, just some of the stuff that's happening in this community. But I'm here to talk a little bit about my story, what's and sort of how I've got to where we are today, back in Maidstone. And I suppose I better start at the beginning. I gave a commitment at about 11 years old to God, but it kind of didn't really mean anything. It did, something happened, but I didn't really know what to do with it. And it wasn't until I was 24 that God directly spoke to me. I'd gone down all the wrong paths and was trying all the wrong things, and God just spoke to me, and I responded. So I won't go into detail. That's kind of, I responded to that, and I began to just seek God more. And he said one thing to me. He said, "You're to love the ones, the youth, the children that nobody else wants." And I was like, "Okay, how do I go about that?" So I soon found it quite easy to spot the ones that no one else wanted. They were causing havoc on the estate. It was it's a big housing estate in Maidstone, and it's great. It's got a really good community feel, but there were youths then who were just running riot. I started engaging with them, just chatting to them, and they loved football, which is great, because so did I. So I just started having a kickabout with them to begin with, but just I needed to learn about them, what made them tick, why they did what they did, what the issues were, and that grew and grew over a period of time. I then started working as a community worker voluntary for the church I was going to. So it gave me more time, and I started mentoring young people. They were out of school, in trouble with police, nowhere else would take them. Now, my background was I had already worked in children's homes. I'd worked in boarding schools for, troubled boys, and worked with young people that were in secure units. So I had a background of that anyway. I understood a little bit about it. But this was totally different. I was doing it with a new freedom, and I now knew God, and I knew that the Holy Spirit could set people free. So that was my desire, and I had one lad that they asked me to see. He was 11 at the time, and nobody really knew what to do with him. Family was quite a close family, didn't want to let anybody in, and I think through fear they didn't want social service and things like that involved, so which I wasn't. I was just the guy from the church. And they let us in eventually, and through that, we started to see change in this young person. My job was to look after one lad, so I had the privilege of doing that. One lad became two became three became four, and I then thought, well, I might as well become a foster carer, you know, because then I can have them overnight as well, because just to give them the parents a bit of time out, because they were sort of at the end of their tether. And so that's what I did. I became a foster carer for a couple of years. Just again, grew, learned more, and in the end, I took a job back. I was newly married. I took a job back because up until that point, I was earning very little, and I couldn't afford a mortgage or rent or anything like that. So I took a job, and I remember at that point, I was really disappointed. I felt the vision had kind of died. I'd had to go back, you know, into work. I really thought that that's what I'd be doing for the rest of my life. But I thought I knew I had to do it. I knew that I had to provide. But within 6 months of taking that job, I got a phone call from the local authority, who once again had a young lad that they didn't know what to do with. They had tried everywhere. He was in a secure unit at the time. They wanted to release him back to his home, but his mum wouldn't take him back without any support, which she was right to do. So I got a phone call. My dad got the phone call. He was also a community worker who'd done it 20 years prior to me coming. And they said, yes, you know, my dad said, "I'd love to support the lad. His name was Lee. But And they said, great, can you do 40 hours a week? And he said, well, I thought you were going to ask for a couple, you know, a couple of hours sort of catching up with them. So he phoned me and I said, yes, I'll do it. And that's where we started. And we registered a charity called King's Reach. And my name's Stuart King. That's not why we called it King's Reach. It's because of the King's Reach into the community. So I had, again, I had one lad. One became two, two became three, three became four. They were all out of school. None of them, they were sort of learning basics to read and write. And so I thought, we've got to address this. So I asked a friend of mine who was a qualified teacher to come and volunteer. So we used to traipse around the house twice a week, all these lads that were banned from everywhere, and we used to go around this lady's house, lovely lady with her young son. They behaved impeccably all the time were there, and they started to learn and read and write, gain confidence, and they had people that were believing in them. We saw them change. We saw them grow in confidence. And then I had the Kent County Council, local authority, phoned me up and said, oh, we hear that you're educating these young people. And I said, well, I'm not, but we have got a qualified teacher who is. And they said, oh, great. Would you like to start a school? And my background is, I didn't finish school. I didn't do school very well. My dad, who was also involved, he's got a report that says, out of the class, number 28, positioning class 28. So between us, we've got someone who hasn't finished school, and we've got someone who was bottom of his class throughout his time at school. The local authority are asking us to start a school. So we spoke about it, and I said, look, we've got four lads at the moment. They're willing to place 10 with us. We can now support 10. We can help 10. So to me, it was a no-brainer. Let's do it. I didn't think of the details. I just thought we can help 10. And my dad had thought of the details a little bit more than I, and the costs and all the kind of things that we were going to need. But the upshot was we said yes, and we took on 10 students. And it was a totally different ball game. But at the beginning, we were left to our own devices, and it was great. We had the freedom to create an education, and we saw these boys changing. As time went on, we took on 10, 15, then 20 students, and 25, 30. Then Ofsted came in and started, and we had to adapt to the curriculum, and we ended up with about 40 students, all out of school. No school would take them, and although we loved it, it became really difficult to maintain because of all the red tape and because of the Ofsted inspections, and they were education driven rather than person centred, and we really struggled. And then a non-Christian lady came in who was overseeing the pupil referral unit, the PRU, where the students were based, and she was anti-church. She found out that we were from. We're from the church, and she made our life really difficult and started cutting back funds, and there was a real battle. And there was really nothing we could do about it because she was the one with the power and held the purse strings. And over a period of time, we dwindled down to eventually she took our entire contract away, and I had to make all of our teaching staff redundant. And all of our pastoral care stopped, and it whittled back down, and there was just me left. And I knew what God said to me, and I knew the vision of God given me, and it seemed it was the second time it died. The first time when I took work again, and I thought, you know, that was going to be it, and the second time when this direct attack against what we stood for came. I hadn't got a clue what I was going to do. All I wanted to do during that period is make sure all the people we were making redundant found work. So we released them early. We gave them time off for interviews. All of them, bar one, had got a job by the time we finished. And the person that didn't have it straight away, 2 months later, got a job. So that was great. But I remember walking around thinking, what am I going to do? I have no idea. I also had things going on in my personal life that was crazy, and it just seemed everything had crumbled all around. About 3 months before it all went crazy, I decided that I didn't want to be a lukewarm Christian. I didn't want to spend my Christian life because I felt I was on the fence on a lot of stuff. Not with everything, but I just felt, I always felt there was more. So I got on my knees and said, God, I'm going to believe every word that I read in the Bible as gospel truth, and I want you to show me how I live that out day by day. And then the upshot of that was everything around me fell apart. And I could have taken that like as, oh, why did I say that? But I didn't. I just thought, no, I've got to believe. And I didn't know what I was going to do. But I received a phone call from a local church and said, we've got a boy. He's 10 years old. He's not attending school. He won't get out of bed. We don't know what to do. Can you help? And I really tried not to get involved because I was sort of trying. I thought, because once I'm involved. And I didn't know where I was at that time. I was just sort of trying to work out what had gone on and where I was going to go. The charity I was running was faced with bankruptcy and all kinds of stuff was going on. But I was driving past his house and the phone went again just as I was driving past this lad's house. So I pulled over, answered, and they said, it's about Louis again. And I said, I'm outside the house. Are you there? I'll come in. So I went in, and as soon as I met the boy, I just knew I had to get involved. As I was walking out of the house, God said to me, would you start a school for Louis? And I was like, I've just shut one. You know, I've just gone through all this painful process of making people redundant. But if you're asking me to, of course I will. Yeah, I'll start a school. I didn't know what that meant. But since then, I went round to pick him up, and he wasn't getting out of bed. He wouldn't even talk to me. But I then found out his mum was terminally ill. He'd had a pretty checkered and tough upbringing up until that point. And I understood why he didn't want to talk. I understood why he didn't want to get up. So I just used to turn up half hour every day, just so consistency of turning up. I eventually got him up out of bed with a McDonald's. I mean, that's the key. McDonald's is the key. And he came from McDonald's with me. And from that point, I was able to build something bespoke for him, just totally focused on him, building his confidence. He was scared of wind. He was scared of heights. He was scared of crowded places. He was all these anxieties, noise. But I once again had the freedom to focus on the one. And again, totally unfunded this was. So he was doing it in complete faith. And I was meeting with the trustees of the charity, and they would say, we've only got 3 months funding left, then we're going to run out of money. Then I'd meet them in 3 months and they'd say, we've only got 3 months money, we're going to run out. But it never ran out. It just kept going. And I don't know how. I can't explain it. But we built this program for this boy, and most of it was about building his confidence, building his character back up again. I mean, he was such a gifted boy, but he was just broken and given up and depressed and at 10. Off the back of that, I had another phone call from someone that used to work for us about 7 years ago, and they said that they had another young lad. And did we still run our school? Because he'd really like to place him in our school. And I explained that we had to shut the school. And he said, oh, that's a shame. There's nowhere that will take him. And as soon as he said that, God's told me to work with the ones that nobody else wants. So I was like, we do run a bespoke education program for students that they can't place in schools. I don't know where that wording came from, but it came out. And so he said, that sounds perfect. Let me phone his social worker. Let me phone his school and let's see. Within a month, they had placed him with us. They'd sent through his educational healthcare plan. They'd sent all the records that says, don't take him because he's violent, because he runs off, he climbs on roofs, he runs away. Yeah, all the reasons not to take him, but that was all the reasons for me to take him. They said, don't work with him one-to-one. He's too dangerous. And bearing in mind, this boy's 12. So I said, yeah, we'll do it. What I do is I do a 6 to 12 week assessment. I spend no education during that time. I spend time with him. I find out what makes him tick. And we go from there. So I took him out and nothing. Don't like school. Don't want to read. Don't want to write. I said, no, but what do you like doing? Nothing. So, okay. No, I like trampolining. All right, let's go trampolining. So the first 8 sessions, all I did was go trampolining. And then I started to try and draw out of him who he was. And he had lost all confidence in who he was. He lost confidence that he's got any kind of a future. And he had given up trying. And again, reading through his records, I understood why. And then one day he showed me a YouTube video of someone that he watches called Colin Furze, who's this crazy inventor. He just makes stuff. He's brilliant. And I said, oh, you like inventing stuff? You like making stuff? Yeah, I do, actually. Okay, let's make something. What do you want to make? I want to make a tank. Okay, model tank. We can make a model tank. No, I want to be in the driver, a life-size tank. I want to make one. So I'm like, yeah, let's do that. And he said, oh, can you make a tank? I said, I haven't got a clue, but we'll find someone who can. So that was the hook with him. So I phoned everybody I knew managed to find someone, two local people who invent stuff. So I went and took him to those. This is the process of inventing something, of making something. This is what you have to do. And then I found somebody who said, yeah, we can build a tank, no problem. What we need is an old 4x4 with a ladder chassis, take the top off, and we make a new top and put that on. I said, yeah, sounds easy, let's do it. So we did, we started this project, but that was his hook back in, and now he's in with us full time. He's doing an hour a week, and within a month and a bit, he was doing full time with us. They've since placed three more with us, and it's all about the one. So every single young person that they place with us gets their very own one-to-one mentor, if you like, and they're with them throughout the process. They're with them all the time. On top of that, they pay for teachers to come in alongside the one-to-one mentors, and we have now got our school they don't go to the same place every day. Wherever is best for them to learn that day, we go. So some go off to vocational programs where they learn woodwork or mechanics. Some go off to animal care courses. But we create a totally bespoke education program for the ones that they can't place anywhere. And it goes back to, because it's about the one. It's about the one. It's about the one. And it's been a fabulous journey. But I'm now doing. If I ran a school and I could have written how I ran it, this is how I'd do it. And I'd love to say that this is the way I planned it. I didn't. God just opened up doors for me. And you know, all I did at times was I just kept going. I just put one foot in front of the other, and it allowed him. There was many points that I thought, it's probably time to knock it on the head. I'll go and get a job. I'll go and do whatever. But I just knew that he was saying, no, it's not time to do that yet. It's not time to do that. So we get the privilege of working. We've been going since 2003, so that's however many years. But we now get the 16 years. We get the privilege now of creating bespoke, individualized programs for the hardest to place students, and we are watching their lives transform in front of us. It's a real, and I'm not overplaying that. For students that can only do an hour a week, to see them buzzing again with life, with that they know that they have got a future. They're starting to believe in themselves again. So yeah, that's me.
Thank you, Stuart. Stuart was telling me all this on Friday, and it hasn't lost its impact on me hearing it again today. And there's a few things that I want to draw out from what Stuart said in his experience. Stopping for the one. That God will always seek out the one. He will always stop for the one. But some of the things that he was drawing out is lack of confidence. And he said that he saw brokenness and lack of confidence, and he just went in and identified the gold that was in there. Because sometimes all we can see is the brokenness of the person. That's what the council was seeing. That's what the parents were seeing, and the education was seeing. They were seeing a broken person that they couldn't handle. But you put the heart of God in there, and God knows what he's placed in every single person. And he'll send people like Stuart into your life to help pull it out, to literally grab your very being and turn up like a bad smell. I'm sure he doesn't smell that much. But turn up constantly and keep on knocking on that door. But amongst that, what I love about Stuart is his love. He has been called to love the broken of the brokenness. A generation that's been forgotten. And you might be sat there thinking, That's great for teenagers, but what about me? What does that mean to me? Well, we are a generation of broken people. You look at society and the brokenness that we just see in our own lives, in our own streets, in our own communities, in our own country, in our own world. We are a broken generation. Every time you turn on the news, it's bad news. Every time you go on Facebook, it's bad news. There's very, very little room for good news. But we're here this morning to tell you that there is good news, that there is hope, that if you are feeling broken this morning, that actually there is goodness within you. And God wants to draw that out. He wants to suck the badness out and call out the goodness that He's placed in you since the day you were born. So how are we going to respond to that? Are we just going to say, that's good, I'm just going to go back to my normal life? Or are we going to actually respond this morning? It's your choice. I can't make you do something you don't want to. But I think there's an opportunity here this morning to respond to that message of love, that hope, to step away from our own brokenness, whatever that may be. Or maybe you want to do it on behalf of someone else. Maybe you just see someone in your own life, you're just so broken. You're desperate. You're desperate for them to be okay. But you know you can't do it alone. Well, the good news is you don't have to. God is with you. God wants it more than you do. But sometimes we just need to do what Stuart did. Is take the first step and then the next and the next. Little by little, we can do that this morning. So, can I have the band back up? We're going to have a bit more time of worship. Yeah.
I think the biggest thing that I learned, and just off the back of what Gavin was saying, God taught me about identity. And I had to learn mine before I understood others and before I could, I think, speak into others. But it took it right the way back to Genesis. God said, let's make humans in our image. And it says, in the image of God they were made. And I then thought, well, what is God? God is love. Okay, so we are made in the image of love. Now, we know we lost that identity. Adam and Eve, they ate the apple. And it says, you know, if you eat the apple, you will surely die. We know they didn't fall over dead. But we do know that they lost their identity. They lost their image and they were cut off from God. Now, if we understand, well, Jesus came back and restored that which was lost, which was our identity. And if we understand that we've been made in the image of love, that I can then walk in patience, kindness, self-control, not self-seeking, so I'm not doing anything out of selfish gain. I think we can understand that we can then give that to others. I also see the effects of when people aren't walking in that and the impact it has on their, the negative impact it has on their life. And I think sometimes it's just through maybe a lack of understanding that they don't need to walk with unforgiveness. They don't need to walk with anger. They don't need to. Now, it's very difficult to tell a young person that, especially with some of the things that they've gone through. But the ones that have stepped into that and started to remove themselves from that and think in a different way, it's just had a much bigger impact and it's propelled them forward much, much more. Now, we do that by spending time with them, modelling a way to them. So, but I just really want to encourage that we are made in God's image. We are made in God's image, and everything that this world has set against us has come to destroy that. And it's come to, it says Christ in us is the hope of glory. And it's that which it's come to attack. It's come to attack Christ in us. The love in us has been under attack for a long, long time. God wants to set us free. And He wants to set us free from all of the things that we would carry that are not of Him, because they will weigh us down and they will stop us from from experiencing the freedom that he paid for. But yeah.